And so you're listening now to Unusual Sources here on 93.3 CFMU FM, broadcasting at 93.3 on the FM dial, and the rest of the world at cfmu.ca, which is our online streaming service. Hope you're at one of those two platforms. And today I'm joined again by Professor Yasser Hadar at McMaster University, and he is with McMaster Faculty for Palestine. So Yasser, thanks again for being on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, those are some names that should be familiar, like Faculty for Palestine. People can find that on Instagram for the McMaster grouping, as well as the McMaster Apartheid Divest and SPHR McMaster and so on. It's really nice to be able to speak with someone both before and after the encampment at McMaster. We spoke approximately in March, I believe.
And yes.
Yeah, you're introducing the concept of the McMaster divestment campaign, which you've been heavily involved in planning out and conceptualizing from the beginning. And I guess that's probably a good starting point. Before we talk about the encampment, maybe you can remind us, what were you looking to accomplish by starting a divestment campaign at McMaster?
So I just have to say that I didn't start anything. We see our role as faculty members as supporting our students. This movement across North America from the very beginning has been student-led, and the students have been well ahead of the faculty. And we've really, we've been catching up to them, trying to do our part and to support them. So I wouldn't say that I was responsible for conceptualizing it or planning it or anything like that. I'm just one of the people who have been trying to give advice when I can and participate in the work that the students have organized and have done. And what the students wanted, and all of us faculty members who support them and agree with them, what we wanted is for McMaster to disclose all of its investments, to divest from all businesses that are benefiting from Israeli apartheid and the genocide in Gaza. And so specifically weapons manufacturers, military contractors, and companies that are on the BDS list. And more specifically, there are companies that have been identified by UN bodies as being complicit in the apartheid regime in Israel, even before this ongoing genocide. So that's the second demand, the divest. And the third one was about boycott. And by boycott, we do not mean boycott of individuals. What we mean is boycott of institutions, which is what Palestinian civil society has called for. They have called for academic institutions to boycott Israeli academic institutions that are complicit in, again, the apartheid regime. And their complicity is well documented. And it becomes more pressing and more heartbreaking that this is not happening in light of the genocide and the targeting that several organizations have identified as having to be deliberate. There is just no other way for it to have occurred. The targeting of academic institutions in Palestine, or as we know, all of the universities in Gaza have been destroyed. And the fourth demand was to declare. We wanted the university to take a stand, to issue a statement that acknowledges what is happening in Gaza, and not to try and hide behind platitudes or neutral language that hides the truth and effectively sides with the oppressor. Because when you're neutral, when something so stark is happening, some violence that is so brutal and so stark at a level that is really unprecedented in our lifetimes, when you are silent and neutral with respect to that, then you are effectively siding with power. And that's not what universities should be doing. Universities should be speaking truth to power. Those were the four demands.
Well, certainly the violence of the situation in Gaza has necessitated direct action. And of course, we have this whole glorious encampment that happened at McMaster, and of course, other universities as well. I'm like, it makes me think a good A good inquiry here is the encampment something you envisioned would happen back in February and March, or how did it come about that you ended up with an encampment?
So the encampment was the initiative of a number of students. I don't think it was even organizations that initiated it. It was really a number of independent students who had this idea, and obviously it was inspired by the whole movement of encampments that across North America in different campuses. I can't give you an exact date of when it happened. I found out about it a few days before it actually came up. I didn't know when it would come up, but we knew that there would be something, and a number of faculty members wanted to make sure that the university would not react to the encampment in a hostile manner. And in fact, we wanted to also state that it's not just the freedom of expression, which is very important in its own right, but that we also actually support the demands of the students. We're not just being neutral and saying, let them say what they believe. We are saying they are on the right side and you need to be with them. And so that's how it came about. We can talk about the results from it, but I think the beautiful thing about this encampment was just the diversity of the people that came together, Muslims, Palestinians, Arabs, Jews, none of the above, just people of conscience. That was the one common denominator of the people that were involved in the encampment. And the vast majority were McMaster students. They had support from faculty, they had support from the community. But the vast majority were McMaster students. And as I said, the only thing that brought them together was the value of justice, the value of standing up and speaking the truth. And they were willing to, put themselves and their careers at risk in order to peacefully in a really, I'm searching for a word that would be that would heap enough praise on them, because they were really amazing as a group of students that came together and set a standard for everyone. Their model protest as I said, at significant risk to themselves and their careers.
Yes, certainly there were people who said to the students, you'll never work again. We'll make sure you don't get a professional job. You'll be unemployed and whatever. And those threats were made directly to the students. But of course, those negatives aside, the encampment was wonderful. I was there 5 or 6 times myself, sometimes bringing supplies, and it was clean. It was well run. It was peaceful. It was organized. There were, all these lectures and talks. There was a library and so forth. As we know, most of it was the students, and they had their own plans and agendas going on. What was your participation as Faculty for Palestine professor at the encampment?
So different professors showed up. We tried to show up as much as possible. We tried to, during the peak hours during the day, there would at least be one or two faculty members on site. And the idea was that just in terms of presence, we would express solidarity. We would talk with the students. Some of the professors went in and did teach-ins, so they became part of the program of the encampment. They would do teach-ins and lectures. And those were beautiful, again, spanning a wide range of expertise. And again, really bringing to life what a university should be about. And then when asked, we would give advice, but really, I don't think there was a lot of need for that. The students had they had a good plan, and I think they charted their way through uncharted waters very well.
Yes, and certainly there were some universities that needed to be reminded of what the purpose of a university is, unfortunately.
Absolutely, absolutely, yes, yeah.
For those who are just tuning in, I'm speaking with Professor Yasser Hedera of Faculty for Palestine at McMaster, and he has supported the encampment and the McMaster Divest from Apartheid campaign. And I guess that's the next stage, really, because of course the encampment has now ended via agreement. You are undoubtedly aware of the documents that were signed or put out by the university. So maybe you can tell me about both those aspects. Like, first, why did the students decide to end the encampment? And secondly, what is in the agreement with McMaster that was negotiated?
Well, let me start by the second question because that really leads into the first question. So the agreement is disappointing in that it doesn't give us all of the things that we asked for. It actually directly and immediately, it gives us very little of what we asked for. The only thing that is promised immediately is disclosure. And even that there is a little bit of a timeline. The information will come over the next several months. It'll be finally be published in October on the financial affairs website of the university, so it'll be available to the public, and it will be done annually. And so the disclosure is important because currently roughly 50% of McMaster's investments is in direct investment, and those will be disclosed fully. And the other 50% is in what are termed pooled investments. And there, the university will disclose the names of the funding pools that it has investments in. And so that would put the onus on us, people who want to get full divestment, to do the research to understand exactly where all of the investments are going. Now, it doesn't give us a commitment to divestment, and it does not give us a commitment to boycott. It does make some steps towards acknowledgement. So the statement itself, the agreement itself, opens with a strong acknowledgement of the horrific attacks on Gaza and the impact that they have had on people around the world and at McMaster. And not just Palestinians, but anyone who is affected by witnessing this kind of violence. So those are good things. As I said, the disappointing part is that we don't get divestment or boycott directly. But what we got, and I believe that this is ultimately what led the majority of the students to decide to accept the agreement. It was a very difficult decision. It was anything but an obvious decision. But I think what led them to agree is that there are clear steps and mechanisms by which we can reach divestment and boycott. So in terms of the boycott, there is an existing committee at McMaster called the International Strategy Advising Committee or Advisory Committee. And they have it's within their purview to look at all of international agreements that McMaster enters into. And so they will take input from students through a working group that includes students, and they will develop an ethical framework to govern all of McMaster's external relations. And so and the ethical framework will take into account human rights. All of that is in the agreement. Now, the actual framework itself, that will be developed in the fall. So what it will exactly say and how it will exactly be enforced, those are the question marks. And I believe we have to work to make sure that you get something that is truly an ethical framework that considers human rights. There is no way that you get a truly ethical framework that considers human rights that does not force you to cut relations with Israeli institutions that are complicit in apartheid and genocide. And again, I'm emphasizing, we are talking about the institutions, and we are talking specifically about complicity with the apartheid regime and the genocide. So I just don't see how you can have an ethical framework for your international relationships that still allows you to go ahead with those. So if the work is done well and we arrive at that framework that the university has committed to, and they should deliver on that commitment, then I think we will eventually achieve, and by eventually I mean within the next few months, like 4 months is the timeline that I'm looking at, we will get to that goal. In terms of divestment, the students will meet with the CFO and get information on McMaster's investments. So that's part of what was guaranteed in the agreement, and that's happening this month sometime. And then the students will be allowed to present to the Board of Governors at the next meeting of the board, the first meeting coming up for the board. And they will present, and which happens to also be in October. So again, we're talking at the same timeline in the fall. But they will present to the Board of Governors. And we have to, again, as faculty and as a community, we have to support them and see that that presentation translates into asking the Board of Governors, which is the body that has authority over McMaster's investments, to make that divestment decision. And then the last thing I will say, which is extremely important, is the agreement recognizes that people will continue to protest, not just that they have the right to protest, but it is expected, given what is happening in the world, that people will continue to protest because we haven't gotten what we want and we need to get what we want. And so we need to speak up. And speaking up means protesting. It means organizing rallies. It means writing letters. It means organizing campaigns to put pressure on the university to deliver what it has committed to. None of that is counter to the agreement. And that is, I think, is very important. We should not take our foot off the pedal, so to speak. The work has just begun. It hasn't ended. The encampment was wonderful in raising awareness, in putting the issue front and center. McMaster has never before negotiated on another issue like this, based on student pressure. McMaster has. I am not aware of other universities that have gone as far in their agreement as what McMaster did. So all of these are positive steps, but the stark fact has to remain, and we have to remind ourselves and remind people that McMaster actually hasn't yet done the right thing. And we need to keep applying the pressure until the university does the right thing. And it's so important that they do, because in fact, until McMaster divests and boycotts, I believe that the university is itself complicit in genocide. And that's a very uncomfortable, it should be an extremely uncomfortable position for anyone affiliated with McMaster to be in. We should all be clamoring for the university to divest and to boycott and to declare and to take more steps than it has taken so far.
Powerful words. I think steps is the operative word here. It looks as if this agreement has given you part of the way there. So as you've indicated, McMaster is going to disclose certain information. You'll be privy to certain meetings and documents about where McMaster's investments are located or what they're investing in. And the students will be able to talk to McMaster, to speak to McMaster and address the university based on the students' knowledge of the university's investments. And in theory, that allows the students to hold the university to account by its own rules, as it has human rights codes and codes that are tied to the United Nations. And if the university is, in fact, recognizing and respecting United Nations codes, that means they would have to be divested from things that are involved in occupation and genocide.
That is absolutely correct. I mean, the reality is you really, this is a very important point, Brendan. So if you allow me, I'm gonna just say again what you just said, which is if the university just implements its current policies, we should be out of all of these relationships. These relationships are contrary to McMaster's values and McMaster's current policies. It just needs to be implemented. And that's where the push needs to happen.
It reminds me of a discussion I heard regarding the University of Toronto encampment, where students were looking into whether the university was invested in the arms trade. And people were asking, why would a university ever be invested in arms trade or military research, weapons research? You know, why are these things we as students have to worry about having to oppose? And why are, you know, it should not be an issue at a university, a site of public learning, in the first place, that these interests, arms manufacturing and, you know, drone cameras and encampment, occupation, it shouldn't be a force that students have to contend with.
That's absolutely true. And unfortunately, in North America, as you know, there is a long history of that. Sad but true that universities have, for a long time, for long periods of their existence, been party to the development of weapons and military ability and they have been instruments of colonialism and imperialism And I don't use these words lightly. I'm not an ideologue in that regard, but it's the history is well known and well documented, and it is really quite surreal to see people refusing to take the lessons from this past and understand that we really need to disengage academic institutions from these kinds of efforts and negative contributions to civilization.
Well, from a personal standpoint, how are your feelings on the resolution of the encampment and the agreement reached, if I may ask? What is your level of satisfaction with regard to the agreements?
Well, I'm not satisfied with the agreement itself at all. I am satisfied with where it the tools that it gives us to continue pressuring and to continue mobilizing. I think that's that would be my argument in favor of the agreement. Is we have to think about the cause, and our cause is to help the people of Gaza and ultimately to end the apartheid regime and to end the illegal occupation and to restore human rights. That is all. That should ultimately be our goal. So it becomes difficult to look at tactics and strategies that will help you get there. If, like me, you believe that BDS is an important tool, is an actual by itself, it's an important outcome, then this agreement is very good in that it gives us the leverage and the processes to pursue in order to get to that goal. If you don't think that BDS by itself is an important goal, then this agreement is not. It becomes even more disappointing in that case because it does not include the level of acknowledgement of the violence that we wanted, and so I think it depends on what you see as the key strategy. I think the encampments, even the ones that have not secured agreements from universities, have had the wonderful impact of raising awareness and putting issues front and center in front of people who would not otherwise have paid attention to them. They've also had the wonderful impact of exposing the hypocrisy of so many of our institutions, including law enforcement in different parts of this country and in the United States. So these are all important objectives, and I think they will help in the cumulative building of pressure that will eventually result in changing the narrative and changing reality globally. But I think you have to make a judgment call as to when you stop one tactic and transition into another. And so the encampment was one stage in the struggle. And I personally am cautiously satisfied that it wrapped up at the right moment with the right outcome for this phase of the struggle. But we now have to take it and build on it. And I have to be cautious in this. I mean, I'm optimistic, but it's not a done deal. And we really, the key thing is to keep this beautiful alliance that came together, keep it together, strengthen it, and don't let up. We can't let up.
Well, as you say, the students are committed to future action in order to carry out this divestment process. Yes. The future of this campaign, obviously they have to undertake the actions that are in this resolution, that they're going to be at meetings and presentations at the Board of Governors and such in September, October, and so on. Other than that, are there other activities that are probably likely to be part of this campaign in the future? And where can people look to find information in terms of the Instagram and the websites? How are people going to remain connected to this struggle?
So I think you mentioned already a number of channels. So SPHR McMaster is the key one. And MAC diversity is the second one, very important. That's from the student side. From the faculty side, it's Faculty for Palestine. So I can't tell you what the students' plans are, but I know these students. I have come to know them over the last 9 months and have been inspired by them. And so I have every faith that they are making plans and that they will continue their action. From the faculty side, one of the things that we try to do, we've done open letters to send to the McMaster senior administration, a number of them so far, and everyone has had more support than the previous one, which is again one of the measures that tells you that the narrative is changing, that more people are seeing what is actually happening. And that really, if I was in the senior administration, I would be looking at this and I would be saying, we need to move faster. We need to align ourselves with our values, because more and more people are just seeing through the platitudes and the excuses, and we're not doing ourselves any service here. But the faculty also recently passed two motions at the McMaster University Faculty Association. And those two motions, they are not binding on the university, but they are, again, they are more tools in our toolbox. So the first motion calls for forming a faculty committee from MUFA, from the McMaster University Faculty Association, that would pursue the disclosure, divest, and boycott goals. So this is a specific mechanism from the faculty body that will seek to get a comprehensive audit of McMaster's investments, that will seek to convince the university to divest from companies that benefit from the apartheid and genocide, and that will seek to end any research partnerships, memoranda of understanding, exchange programs, etc., with Israeli institutions that are complicit in apartheid and genocide. And the second motion was to call on the university to commit to not pursuing any disciplinary or punitive action against the students who were involved in these protests. Now, I think it would be a disaster for the university to pursue such actions. It would be a show of bad faith. It would be counter to the spirit of the agreement, if not the letter of the agreement. And it just sets us back. Like, the McMaster has set an example that is better than other universities by entering into this agreement. If they now begin to act in bad faith towards students, staff, or faculty members who have participated in these protests, that just puts us back so many steps and puts us in company with the, you know, in the worst company that we can think of across North America. So I sincerely hope the university will not go down this route, which would be very foolish. But the MUFA has now called for this explicitly, that McMaster administration should commit to not pursuing any punitive actions or disciplinary action against the people that were involved in this peaceful protest. So those were the two motions, and they are, I think, important in applying pressure, in again raising awareness around the issue, and in saying that we as faculty, we agree with the students. These students are doing the right thing. They are saying the right thing. What they are asking for is not unreasonable, and McMaster should do it because it is consistent with our values and our policies.
Certainly, we've seen with the difficulties at some other universities what happens when a university doesn't follow its ethical policies. So yes, I agree there. Well, that's a very informative and erudite commentary. So thanks very much. I think we're all more illuminated and can better understand this issue as it unfolds. So thanks once again, Yasser, for joining us today.
Thank you, Brendan. Appreciate it.